Sullivan Conference has been so well organized, run so smoothly, and we really do, all of us owe a fantastic debt of thanks to Tom and his fantastic and competent crew. So let's now move on to the conference summary. Eric Beckman? And are we going to have any discussion after this, or?
No.
About a half hour?
An hour, maybe quicker. It'll definitely be done in a half hour. This is a lot of fun, because this is a great conference, and I hope I can do justice in this summary. This is the outline. I'm going to give just a quick overview of my thoughts, talk about some of the highlights of the talks. Not all were important, and that includes the posters, which were often referred to. But I can only do the highlights of a few talks, so I apologize in advance for that. And I'm not going to present a lot of names, because most of the people are young, and I don't know the names, and that's... I'll mention a few names, probably, but maybe not. Then I want to end by talking about instrumentation, past, present, and future, and this may be the most important thing that I do in this presentation. Okay, the summary is, to me, this was very spectacular gains in both observation and theory over Tucson. It was just incredible to me. I enjoyed Tucson, but I enjoyed this one about three or four times more, just in terms of the what I learned personally. Now, I hope everybody else feels the same. The major addition was the X-ray astronomy. Also, the effect of the large telescopes in the IR, the 8 to 10 meter, and the large arrays, and the millimeter and submillimeter interferometry. But there are other games as well. That's just some of the highlights. Okay, just on, this was the first day. I actually wasn't here. I missed my plane. So these are notes from Mark Morris. On the large scale, 400 to 200 parsecs, the radio, and if you show that first slide. Now, this isn't the one that was presented, unfortunately. This is the old one that's in the poster. But tremendous amount of structure. And the new map showed 18 new filaments, not all in the perpendicular to the plane. So for the first time, they're seeing radio filaments that are along the plane. And I know Mark is very interested in this, having discovered the major arc just above Sagittarius Star. We heard about the X-ray gas for the first time, and a temperature of 3 × 10⁷. And then we also heard about X-ray point sources, 2,000 in the central 40 parsecs. These have hard gamma, so they're probably white dwarfs or neutron star binaries. Yeah. We also heard about molecular material in a molecular bar, and it appears to have a shape of about 500 by 200 parsecs. And the east side is towards us. So that if we're viewing it down here, the bar looks like that. The stars have an angle about like this, so they're offset. And this is what you see in other galaxies. So that's kind of interesting. Okay, we also heard about hot gas. This is from Antarctica, and these are some of the very first results at the high COs. And there is a lot out there, and there was also absorption. We also heard about all the molecular material from OCA, which is gravitationally stable in equilibrium with the hot gas, and then they're now trying to find out where the star formation will be triggered by the cloud-cloud collisions. There was a talk on absorption features in the IR. Now, a lot of this is between us and the galactic center, but they did see dense water absorption on very small timescales, factors of 2 and tau over just a small region in the galactic center of 2 parsecs. You see organic type signatures as well, and I won't discuss that. And of new to me and others was that there's an absorption feature at 6 microns in a one of these Wolf-Rayet type RC, dusty Wolf-Rayet stars, for the first time in the quintuplet. So for the first time, the quintuplet actually has something, a feature. So before it's been featureless, and this, it looks like it is a Wolf-Rayet star, as Don Figer had predicted. And then, very exciting, I wish I'd heard this talk, was on the X-ray reflection nebula. They see X-ray emission from Sag AB2 and Sag C and the radio arc, and they believe it's a reflection off of a previous time, and this, they modeled this, when Sag A star or some other source would have a luminosity of 10 to the third ergs per second, maybe 300 or 2,000 years ago, some longer time scale. That's a very interesting and exciting result, and hopefully we'll learn more about that in the future. Now, there was a lot of talk about magnetic fields, and I did arrive for this, and I'm not going to say too much because magnetic fields I always get confused with because you got this cross product, and makes it very hard. I have a hard enough time with three dimensions when you're looking in two, as we've been discussing. And then when you get the cross product with the B field. We do see both polar and toroidal fields, polar through the plane, that's from the radio filaments, and toroidal now from the molecular clouds, and the very nice work that the submillimeter people, Giles Novak, presented. And both seem to be about 1 millijansky, and they're now nice models that this maybe can be explained. Now, in summary, there was a discussion, and unfortunately, Nick wasn't here, and now he's left again, so I can't get his take on this, but there was a nice discussion on how much volume do the various components. We see a lot of components in the media. We got this hot gas, and now they're seen in the X-ray. There's H1, there's molecular, dense molecular, and there's ionized. And I just wrote down some numbers people were throwing out. Most of the volume is actually in this hot X-ray gas. 50% was the estimate. Of course, it has very little matter because the density is so low. The H1 is about 10 to 20%. Molecular, people thought it was less than 10, but I suspect it's a little bigger because we don't have 100% yet. Dense molecular, just a few percent, and ionized gas, a few percent. Then we had a discussion about star formation, and particularly three massive clusters, the Arches cluster, the quintuplet cluster, and the Sag A cluster that's around the black hole. The mass of the stars is on the order of the most massive of 100 solar masses, and it appears that it's dominated by high mass stars, although I put a question mark there because we haven't done a complete sample down the IMF, although there are estimates to the total mass, so that's. And the time scale of these clusters is a few times 10 to the 6. We did not discuss much about Sag B2 and Sag C. They are younger and probably have similar properties. Tau is about 10 to the 5th years for these objects. And in terms of their mass, in terms of stars, they may be, they certainly have these massive stars from the radio properties, and they may turn into a cluster. I'll talk about the Sag A star cluster later, and so I'm not going to cover it now. All right. The next thing I want to discuss, which we were just discussing, and we discussed it the previous day, and that's Sag A East. We now have very nice X-ray observations that say it's where they see it in the center of the radio source, so just as you expect from a supernova, hot gas inside. So it's a supernova with a total luminosity of about 10 to the 49 ergs. It's very typical for a supernova. It's positioned behind Sag A star. We had that beautiful radio image that showed that, and Sag A west. And it is suggested that it has expanded into Sag A star. I'm going to, after our previous discussion, this is what I wrote last night. I'm going to cross that off. I think it's probably still a question mark, but there is good evidence that it has, in fact, expanded up to the to the Sagittarius star. This is the circumnuclear ring that we were just discussing. This is the 20 kilometer, this is the 50 kilometer. I don't know if the geometry's right, line of sight is here, but it's basically what was just presented on the computer screen. So, with Sagittarius East maybe touching Sagittarius star, but not a lot through it. And there's still some questions we have to. I might say that the thing I learned most, one of the things I really learned, is where things are located in the galactic center. And that's very important if we're going to try to understand what's going on, where things are along the line of sight. Okay, then the thing that we just discovered now is the circumnuclear ring. And since I had the little drawing up there, I drew, although I see I have my arrow going the other way. So, well, that's a different view, that's all right. Sagittarius star is near the center of the circumnuclear ring. It is a, well, you just heard about it. It's a ring of about 10 to the 4th solar masses, and it's rotating, it's tipped. So this is in front, this is the east over here, this is the back, and it's going around like that, same rotation as the galaxy. And then there is a northern arm that's coming off here. It must come off when this part is in front of Sagittarius star, we just heard that, and then comes down and goes across. This is most of what Sagittarius West is, although Sagittarius West is also the mini spiral and this part of the arm. I just put down a few things on the circumnuclear ring. It's around Sagittarius star, its radius is 5 parsecs. Maybe it even goes into 1 parsec in the very hottest gas, maybe a little bit further out in the cooler gas. It's hot in the center, with beautiful observations of HC, ammonia. It is clumpy from, we heard the total mass is about 10 to the 4. The mass inflow is about 10 to the minus 4 solar masses per year. Collisions are rare, and therefore it's long-lived. We also heard about the mini-spiral inside. Do you have the view graph of the mini-spiral, remember? We've seen it many times, so that's all right. You don't have to get it. Now we can get the acceleration for the first time from bracket gamma in principle and the radio. We saw a demonstration of that. And therefore we can get orbits in the mini spiral, and it looks like the northern arm is a orbit. We saw 2 talks on that. And the northern part of the northern arm is in front of Sagittarius star. Okay, to me, the most exciting part of the conference, although that was all very exciting as well, is Sagittarius star itself. And I will start with the radio millimeter and submillimeter. I knew the least about that, although we've been hearing Fred, he's gone now, so, talk about it for years. I didn't appreciate all of these. And the thing that I found very interesting is the circular polarization and the linear polarization. At long wavelengths in the radio, Sagittarius star is circular polarized. It also, by the way, has a rising spectrum into the submillimeter. Do you have that one? You don't have that one. That's Hornstein's.
It went in hibernation.
It did. All right. When you get it, we'll. All right. Result that I found extremely exciting at this conference was that linear polarization in the millimeter and submillimeter is now, it had been seen before by the JCMT, but now it's verified. Okay. This just shows the spectrum steeply rising here, then a very rapid drop.
Wrong. That's the model. That's not the
observation. Yeah, well, it's close to the observation.
No. No, the steep.
You're right. The observations are like that.
No. And then, like that. It's flat.
Yes. This is F new. Yeah.
It's a significant difference.
Yeah.
2 orders of magnitude. Sorry.
Okay. I should have gotten the data. This is the only one we have. has rides though into the submarine. Yeah. You agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah. But see, linear polarization in the millimeter and submillimeter have been verified by the interferometer. And this is very exciting. They now can get the Faraday rotation and say something about the gas along the line of sight. And that really does help the models and understanding what is going on. This, I hope we can use in the future to go into the infrared, and I'll discuss that a little bit later. Then there's also variability. It seemed like it was about a factor of two. There is a steady state that's there most of the time, but then you get these factors of two flares about 20% of the time. The time scale for these flares is days or weeks. I should add weeks there, if I remember right.
And hours occasionally.
And occasionally hours, okay. But mostly days and weeks, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's some periods, indication of periods. It's at the three sigma level, but there are two peaks, and one of them is 100 days. I guess the other one is at half that or twice that, I'm not sure, or 2.4.
2.5.
And is it longer?
Longer.
Longer. Okay, so that would be at 250 days. And these periods change slowly with time over the years. This has to be understood in terms of something, but I didn't hear anybody say what it was, or at least I didn't understand it. I mean, maybe someone did. Now, the X-rays are adding new information to Sag A star, and Mark Morris talked about this, and can we see his image? Okay, this is where Sag A star is, and what he talked about are these lobes that are pointing right back to Sag A star, and they're also spaced away like they are something that is moving out from Sag A star. So that's interesting, lobes or jets. The other thing we found was that there is a quiet state for Sag A star, and it's on the position of Sag A star now to a half an arc second or better. You know the exact number?
Less than a third of an arc second.
Less than a third of an arc second. The resolution that they have is about half an arc second, but you're able to center it better than that. It has a quiet state that it's in most of the time. The source is extended. It's about 0.5 arc seconds, which is 0.02 parsecs. The temperature of this extended source is 10 to the fifth K. There might be an iron line as well. The luminosity, however, is extremely low, 10 to the 33 ergs per second. That's less than a solar luminosity, or maybe it's about a solar luminosity in X-rays from a black hole of 2.5 times 10 to the 6th. This is remarkable in this quiet state. I'll say a little bit about this later in when I talk about the theory. Then there are flares, just like in the radio. Four have now been seen. Like the radio, the duty cycle is about 5 to 20%. However, they aren't the same because, first of all, they increase by a factor of 10 to 50 over the quiet stage. And they're a structure that is on a 10 Schwarzschild radius from a 2.5 times 10 to the 6th black hole. They are harder. The structure is on a time scale of minutes or hours, so unlike the radio flares, which are on the order of days and weeks, even though the duty cycle is the same, the overall length is completely different. So we're talking about not possibly a related phenomena, but right now it wouldn't be the same phenomenon, different region or something. I think Occam's razor would say that they're related. I mean, that's just, I wouldn't want to say that we have to see them buried together to have them related, but we certainly don't understand what's going on. The spectrum of these flares is hard. They're not associated with radio variability, although there's very poor overlap. There was some suggestion that maybe it's at the beginning when you stack the periods, these three sigma bumps, but I don't believe that until we have a lot more data. and it's a strong association. This very short time scale down at 10 R sub S, combined with the proper motions, which I'll discuss in a minute, is a strong association with a black hole. And that's why this is so interesting. I'm going to have to hurry up here. I still may make it, but I don't like to go too fast and I don't miss anything. Sagittarius star in the infrared, we only have upper limits. I have to say I've been looking for it for the last 20 years, I'm still looking. There's a major drop from the submillimeter, from the upper limits, as you say, seen. Polarization might help. The models say that it'd be 20-30% polarized. It is in the submillimeter. We're going to start working on this with Sophia. I'll discuss Sophia at the end. I also want to know, where is the accretion disk? If it has a temperature greater than 10 to the 4th and a size of a few Schwarzschild radius, we should be seeing it already at 2 microns. So is it thin, that accretion disk, or does it not exist? I don't know. We don't see it in the X-ray either, so I suppose it's this is a mute point until you actually sense something. But most black holes have an accretion disk. Anyway, that's just another mystery, I guess. Sagittarius star, the orbits, this was extremely exciting. We now see it in the stars, and we're getting true orbits. And what I found particularly spectacular is that the two groups agreed. You have the, you don't have the two groups probably, but go ahead and put the, apologize to the Garking group. Data essentially lie on that line for SO2. It's very nice to see that the results agree so well. In fact, if you look at the models in their paper and the models presented by Andrea, first starting back in the summer at the symposium in Cambridge for Martin Rees, the numbers are essentially identical. And we are working completely independently. The mass Andrea showed was for one star, within 60 AU, that star went in and out. You remember it? That was on the previous one, I believe. It's this one here, going in and out. I'm not sure which way it went, but went right by the black hole. It had a speed at the time that it went by the black hole. That's fine. Go ahead and you can take off the Ugrad. Of 9,000 kilometers a second. This certainly says that a black hole is likely. It almost rules out the fermion ball. I suppose people will come up with something else, and you know, until we actually get to the surface of the black hole, we won't know that we're there. One radial velocity of that very fast moving star, S2, so we actually now have the past. We know it came between us and the black hole as it went around it, and so we didn't get to see it go behind the possible lensing. I want to point out that although there's a lot of stars that seem to be moving around in these images, collisions are very unlikely. It's a three-dimensional space. It's like that girl that was doing the four balls. They weren't hitting each other because they're going into the other space. And these stars have a radius of about a tenth of an AU. The black hole Schwarzschild radius is a tenth of an AU, and they're getting in a few AU, so there's a lot of space out of there. They'll never collide on any time scale we're interested in. Once in a while, stars will collide in the galactic center, but not. Just wanted to point that out to people because they were asking that. Okay, then there was a nice talk by Mark Reed on the orbits from the radio. They can get the position of Sagittarius star within 10 milliarcseconds. By the way, these orbits now get an independent position of where the mass is. Very accurate, what is it, 2 milliarcseconds?
Yep.
Error, where the mass is. Mark can get Sagittarius star by doing his tricks with the masers to 10 milliarcseconds. And they agree, as you remember from Andreas, they're right on top of each other. That's 100 AU. So Sagittarius star and the mass are coming together. Very nice. And of course, the X-ray source is within 0.3. The mass of Sagittarius star itself, that is the radio source from its motion, is getting up close to 10 to the 6th. which of course is similar to this 3 × 10^6 solar masses that the two proper motion groups are getting. How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
All right. Sagittarius star, a few other issues. Star formation, that's a big issue because these stars are now, we have a spectral line that's young. It's a 10, 15 solar mass star whipping around the galactic center. How did it get there? How did these proper motion stars get there? They're probably all young massive stars from their brightness and their color and their spectra. Where did they form? Well, we heard from Andreas Eckhart that IRS 13 may be a young cluster. There's evidence of that. That's new. Did it form there? I don't know. I would suggest we might think about a thick disk, a molecular disk at an earlier time when a molecular cloud came in. I don't know if such a thing can form, and I'm not sure stars can form out of it, but it's similar to how Jupiter formed in our own solar system. You may even have that 20,000 black hole that Nick wanted to clean out. That may form there, and then you have the stars forming around that black hole, kind of a all in the disk. Anyway, that's just speculation. That's something to think about. There is, I've already pointed this out from the X-ray, that Sagittarius star was luminous in the past, so there may have been something that happened that destroyed that disk with all the material went on, who knows. Okay, just a little on theory, and then I want to get to the instrumentation part. Accretions, disk, it can maybe explain the flares. Jets can explain the flares and polarization, but there doesn't seem to be any agreement at this point, but I think people need to keep working on this. This is our best chance to understand how a black hole works, so don't give up just because it's not easy. The real question I have is why is the luminosity so low, and this was discussed by in the session yesterday. The mass to luminosity is 10^3 to 10^4 for Sagittarius star. So it's really dark matter. Of course, it is a black hole, so I guess that's in the right direction. Brown dwarfs, white dwarfs, and pulsars have that kind of mass to luminosity. Stars, galaxies, active nuclei, they have a value much closer to 1 or much higher than 1. I mean, less than 1. We also found that the accretion is low, and that's just a necessity to keep the luminosity down. 10^-8, 10^-9 solar masses per year, or epsilon, the efficiency is very low, 10^-3. Here I think something is missing because we know that the gas is coming in there and something else is going on, but I don't know what it is. However, I want to point out that the very fact that there is very little accretion, there's a very small accretion disk, there's very low luminosity, maybe we are lucky because we can get in near the Schwarzschild radius and understand the physics. So let's look at it as a positive thing because it's the only one we have and it's the state we're in. And it is a black hole and nobody's gonna argue about that. So let's keep trying to find out what's going on. Now, is the X-ray a source in a quiet phase? Even from a theoretical side, it was not understood. It's slightly extended, so they thought maybe it was the Bondi-Hoyle accretion disk, or it could be a background cluster, and this is not even understood at this point. That'll have to continue. All right, now let me go to instrumentation. Past, I want to talk about IRs. I'm an IR astronomy. In pre-1983, which was only 19 years ago, we had single detectors only, and we did everything with a single detector. We scanned it across the sky. In 1989, Don Hall asked me to organize, is Don here?
Okay.
A detector workshop in Hilo, which I did, and our chair, Tom Jabal, he is here, good, summarized the future of where detectors arrays were going to go and their effect on astronomy. He had this plot, And he had this dark line here, this is years here, and this is log of the number of nights times the infrared astronomer and pixels, nights, infrared astronomers per infrared astronomy per year. And at the time of the conference, we were right here at this increase. It did level off a little bit into the 90s. Then we had a big increase when the 256 arrays came on. Then it leveled off a little bit again, but we got more and more. This is a log scale going up to 10 to the ninth now. I couldn't get it on correctly. I had to shrink it down, so it's a log scale. And then we got it down 4K by 4K arrays. So you got it almost right, Tom. This is not a real draft. This is just a nice thing. However, interestingly, at the end of this article that Tom wrote, Dave Allen, who unfortunately isn't here, and he'd love to have been here, I know he would have, our second organizer, Angela, was his student, he said that fewer nights would be needed. And he's right, fewer nights are needed now to get the data. Tom Duvall said more data unreduced and into your disk drawer. Well, that's also true. However, the gains have been just unbelievably spectacular. And if you can now show me the image that was just done, I cannot. Neither of them? All right. Okay. You'll have to believe me how spectacular. I was going to show you an image that was taken with the simple arrays, similar to Dave Allen's single scans. And he made the comment at that time, we were not beating the single arrays. He had just resolved IRS-16 with a single scan detector. And that's all we could do with these arrays, do the same. We could just barely resolve them. However, we saw from the images of the BLT and Gemini and Keck, with these large arrays, we now have unbelievably spectacular images. We have 100 sources or 1,000 sources where there was one source before. I mean, just we're now, we're going to see it here.
Batteries that last longer?
Well, they said there was no problems, but we have finally come to a problem. All right, let me go on because we're running out of time. Just go ahead. There have been spectacular gains. We now have 4K by 4K. Not only are the two groups that have been doing the proper motions working independently on different telescopes, different people. They're using different detectors. On the Keck, we're using an new antimony developed by Forrest, who did a lot of early galactic center work on Al Fowler and Ian Gatley. And on the BLT, they're using a Mercat Telluride. This is the MPI group. And Don Hall, who not only developed this, but he also was the first person to see the mass outflow from the IRS-16 sources and the helium stars, Frank Lowe and Eric Young. I wanted to mention these names because they're so important, and there are many others. That's just the three, six people that I could think about. But they are the ones that made this all possible, along with Jerry Nelson and the Keck and the people that built the BLT.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Let's just...
Here we go.
Oh, that's the Keck.
That's Gemini.
No, Gemini. Sorry.
There's the old one.
You can just barely see the IRS-16 sources, northeast, northwest, sea, and southwest. Then just a few years later,
a few years later, I'm sorry.
There. And as you can see, there's the 16 sources, but there are just thousands of stars here. Just unbelievable difference. Okay, instrumentation for the future, and I'm sorry, Chair, that I'm running over a few minutes, but I do want to get to this. First point, we need to keep up the observations, particularly on the variable measurements. We don't want to stop this. Fred made this point yesterday. Just because the theory isn't working out, just because it's hard, you don't stop. This is the only way we're going to understand this most important source in the galaxy. There's not another one like it. Maybe the sun is more important for us personally, but this is the most important source in the galaxy. So correlations are needed in time, and you must get BEMA and the other submillimeter instruments involved. So this is to everybody out there, the beautiful BEMA results, they should be part of this monitoring program. And obviously the submillimeter telescope here, the Smithsonian, and we now have the director of the VLT, so. My second point is that we need a dedicated small, possibly like XMM, I was
XMM is a bit larger than
All right. If it's larger, somebody that's clever needs to figure out how to do this, you know, without spending Chandra's type's money. And if XMM did that, then we have to look at it. But we need one dedicated for this problem, or essentially dedicated. Obviously, it could do other things, but where you don't have to apply for time and we can get this problem solved. This is an important problem. Okay. CARA, that's the combination of BEMA and Owen Sally.
Karma.
All right, thanks. ALMA, we need them as soon as possible, and Fred said we'll get the first few ALMA telescopes, and this hopefully won't take too long. I said this in 19 at the Tucson. We need to dedicate one of the VLTs to this project, at least when the Galactic Center is up and the people want to use it. I don't understand such an important problem why we can't do that. Sophia is coming on, and as many of you know, I'm the head of Sophia, and I want to say a little bit about it. It will be very important for the Galactic Center. I'll just mention CERTIF, which is being launched in January. It cannot do the Galactic Center because of the dynamic range. It saturates. But SOFIA, it'll be one of its prime targets. It'll have higher angular resolution. It'll have spectroscopy. SOFIA will have an angular beam of 5 arc seconds. We're going to get polarization on to do SAT-J star after what I heard today, or this week. And there are many other projects that Mark could tell you about that can be done in the central region of the galaxy. Just want to show you a few pictures. We have a primary mirror. This is it in Saint-Germain in Paris. The telescope is being built in Germany, and this is it just before shipment, built by MAN, and it was brought to Waco, Texas, and unloaded. This is last month, and then we have an airplane as well, and this is the bulkhead in the airplane and the door that now has to be put on top. The telescope will go in a couple of months.
What's the diameter?
The diameter is 2.5 meters, it's going to collect a lot of flux and it'll do great work on the Galactic Center, including polarization. My summary is this is a great workshop. I want to thank the organizers, and I'll see you in 4 years.